Welcome to another episode of Talk Tovey to Me. I'm Jess.
And I'm Meg, and we're two sisters that love to talk all things business, mindset, self-development, and everything in between.
This is normally part of our weekly phone catch-ups, but hot girls don't gatekeep, so we've decided to bring our combos to you.
Hey, Sissy Bae.
Hey, Boo.
How's your week been? I'm asking that knowing full well it was not it.
Yeah, it's been a fucking roller coaster, that's for sure. For anyone who listened to last ep, you'll know that Dad went into hospital last Wednesday. And for anyone who doesn't know, they live in the middle of nowhere. Yeah. So the closest hospital is either Toowoomba or Warwick, but Toowoomba is apparently really busy. So he got taken by ambulance to Warwick Hospital because he had what we now know was atrial fibrillation, which is basically like a very wild heartbeat. Like it goes from like 70 beats to like 160 beats in like 0.5 seconds and just keeps going wild. And they basically just dismissed him when he went in the first time and said, just book an appointment with your GP in a few weeks' time. And so we were all kind of like, okay, that's weird. And then we had our parents' joint 60th birthday party on the Saturday night, which we can chat about after. It was so much fun, but Dad was very much not himself. Like, we kind of knew he was putting on a brave face for everyone because there was like 70 people there or something.
Which was actually like distressing in itself.
Yeah.
Because like seeing Dad like that when he's never like that was, yeah, quite confronting.
Yeah, yeah. And you guys know he's like our absolute fucking world. So then he kind of went to bed quite early the night of the party, and I went and said goodnight to him, and he was like pale and like not well by any means. And then we left early as on Sunday. Jess can tell you about our drive home. And then Monday sometime, like kind of mid-morning, he called the ambulance again, and I got a phone call from our stepmom, and she basically updated us saying the same kind of issues were happening. And so from the hour and a bit drive in the ambulance to Warwick, I was like, I'm not having a bar of this again, because they just weren't helpful at all the first time.
And I just don't think they're very equipped out there with like all of
Yeah. them. And I went into like full fight mode, like full action.
Yeah, it was action. Figure Toby.
Everyone else is having a meltdown.
I was like, not sweet at all.
I think the adrenaline hit me. And so by the time he left their home and got to Warwick, I'd made about 47 phone calls and organized for him to be transferred to the Wesley, which is a private hospital in Brisbane, because I called Nick's parents and they have had this particular heart specialist like do a lot of kind of stuff for them in the past. And so they called his people, and then like there were so many different calls kind of going on. And so it was actually kind of funny because apparently Dad was saying when he got to the hospital, because I'd kept calling the hospital to make sure that they like were doing the transfer as soon as he got there, like, and didn't fuck around, because it's, you've got to be so direct and stern with the reception staff and stuff like that, because otherwise they'll just be like, la, la, la.
Yeah.
And so it was funny because Dad was saying apparently as soon as he got into the Warwick Hospital, they were like, who's this Meg person? Is that your wife? Like, she's, and apparently they were like kind of like cut that I'd like organize this transfer. And yeah, and they were like so shook how I'd like gotten, because obviously
the situation.
Yeah, because like the specialist in Brisbane, apparently he's like one of the best in fucking Australasia or some shit. Like, he's top dog.
The
heart doctor.
The goat of hearts, yeah.
Yeah. And so, yeah, then he got transferred to the Wesley, thank God, because they ended up doing a cardioversion a few days later, which basically is like a reset or like reboot for your heart, where they kind of like do a endoscopy first to make sure you have no blood clots, because if you do a cardioversion and you have any blood clots, you can have a stroke. So they go in, check that first, and then they kind of like zap your heart back to normal. And it can take a few times, it can work straight away, or it cannot work at all. If you've had the atrial fibrillation for like a long time, it cannot work. But he came out and said that he had like instant relief and he was just so grateful because he was saying like he was like almost crying in the ambulance from Warwick to the Wesley because like all his kids were like calling and messaging and like organizing everything. And I was like to him, yeah, well, actually it was for me, not you, because I need you here.
Yeah, literally.
Need you here for another 40 years.
I also feel like it was also triggering for us as a family because of the way our mum passed. So firstly, she, whilst our parents were not together by any means, they were divorced, but our mum passed of heart disease and was quite sickly for some time. But when she was actually dying, they said to us, we're at home, we're at Dad's that week, and they called, I think they called Dad, and they were like, Joanna is dying, she's got a few hours to live, like, she doesn't want the kids to see her like this, but you need to bring them now to say goodbye kind of thing. And we literally left, like, straight away, and within the 20-minute drive that it took us to get there, she passed. So whilst it's obviously completely different for us, I think, as children, we are like, it's fucking better to be safe than sorry.
Mm.
And we're not waiting around for someone else to take action. So I was so grateful for you doing all that too, because I just like was not sweet that day. Like, I
no. Not and you called me like bawling your eyes out. And I, because it had been, I don't know, 10 minutes or so since I'd spoken to Roz, like my first thought was like worst case scenario because you were just crying and couldn't speak.
And also like the reason why I was like extra emotional is because I felt like you guys can all be together when these things happen like so easily. Like you can sit at the hospital together, you can like get in the car and go be there. But like for me, I'm always the one that's like, can someone let me know if I need to come up? Like, do I have to cancel work? Like, what am I doing? Like, I'm down here. And I'm like, I'm always the one that's like on my own, like waiting for someone to tell me whether I should come up or not. We were like, Dad could be completely fine. So then,
yeah,
like, he's like, don't come up. Like, so it's that extra bit of being down here by myself and wanting to be with you all.
Yeah, yeah.
So I was very grateful for you. That's my gratitude for the week.
Yeah, it was actually like
that situation.
After the procedure, I think you'd call it, he was like, we've spoken about our dad a few times on here, and he's like, he's just kind of a blokey bloke. And yeah, he was like, I've never seen him so grateful. He was like, you literally saved my life, because if you didn't organize the transfer and everything, I'd still be fucking around in Warwick. They would have probably sent me home, done nothing again, and like who knows what could have happened. So yeah, it was a lot. But I feel like actually just on that note, when you called me, I was like just not having anything bad as answer. Like I was like, even when we went to get food whilst we were waiting for the procedure to happen, which was like, I don't know, 2 hours or something. And our stepmom was like quite stressed. And I was like, just adamant that nothing bad was happening. Yeah, I was like, it's just not, I just know it's not, life is not taking him just yet. Because he needs to be here for a lot longer.
Yeah, our weddings, so, our children,
yeah,
all of the things.
So, yeah, I've just my week's basically just been spent at the hospital. I still did, like, my usual meetings and business coaching calls.
We actually had a meeting together in the hospital room, I believe.
Yeah.
That was the just in the background, like, hey.
Yeah, he was making jokes that, like, he couldn't get rid of me because I literally was just like, I don't have any reason why I can't be there. So. Yeah. I'm just going to come hang out. And it was actually really nice because we don't, like, obviously get to spend days together one-on-one often. So, and I was
FaceTime McGee.
Yeah, yeah. He's just the best. I just love him so much. So, yeah, it was actually funny too because I was telling him because he's got some new medication he's got to take with breakfast. So I was sending him his, like, new meal plan for breakfast that's, like, gut-friendly. And
yeah, that's what I said to him yesterday. I was like, make sure you're eating protein and la, 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 la.
Yeah, yeah. And he was like, you're a bit bossy. I was like, yeah, well, you're not fucking going anywhere, so deal with it.
Do what you fucking told, basically.
Yeah. So, yeah, that
he
happened.
He was definitely also, I loved, like, I could just tell he was feeling better because I went on my story and I was, like, giving a bit of an update, like, on that he had the procedure and it went really well and I hadn't spoken to him yet because he was sleeping, but I'd spoken to you and Roz and that he was doing really well. And then literally I got off that story and he FaceTimed me back and I was like, this guy's fucking cutting laps around the ward, like literally slow as fuck. But he was cutting laps around the ward, telling me that he was all blocked up and he was trying to get himself to poo. And then he proceeds to tell me about the procedure, the endoscopy part, and he's saying, this is just how I knew he was feeling better. He was saying that they had to put this clear, thick, creamy liquid down his throat, which, first of all, disgusting. And then they put, in his words, a cock ring in his mouth to ensure that he didn't bite down on the tube that they were going to put down his throat. And then he goes, and then I was out cold and I don't know how they violated me after that. And I'm thinking, true. I'm like, classic Toby behavior. He's feeling back to himself. But I was completely repulsed but also super relieved that he was back to having banter and, you know, being appropriate.
Yeah, so that was my week. And I actually had some really fucking epic business mentoring calls as well in amongst all of that.
I just also want to say that it's just a really big testament to your character as a leader, business owner, boss, all of the things, to be able to just continue to show up for those people in a scenario like that.
Oh, I love you. I feel like, yeah, in a non-toxic way though.
like you were, I'm sure you were communicating that.
Yeah, and like grateful for everyone because they were so obviously so understanding and everything. Do you want to tell everyone about your drive home? So before all of this went down.
Yeah, so on Friday, as you guys know from last ep, I picked up my new car and we drove it to the farm, a Range Rover Velar, good riddance to the Merc. And I was driving it home on Sunday because I was going to get it transported down to Wollongong so that I didn't have to do the drive. But it would have been another 2 weeks for me to get the transport. It was like a 12-day turnaround time to get the car down to me. And I'd already sold my car about 3 weeks prior and I happened to be in Queensland. So I was like, look, I'm just going to drive it home. I've got a million, like, calls I can listen to on the drive. I'm just going to nip it in the bud and do it all in one go. So we left the farm after the birthday party at, like, 7 a.m. in the morning. I had to drop Meg and Nick to the Gold Coast on the way. So it was like the longest fucking day of my life, but it was actually fine. So Nick drove to the Gold Coast to where they live. And then I drove, I think we got there at about 10:30, 10:40 in the morning. And then I drove home to Wollongong. So yeah, I got home at 10:30. So it was about 12 hours on top of that first three and a half hour drive. And yeah, I had like quite a few business courses and calls that I had, like masterclasses and things that I had purchased in the past that I either wanted to re-listen to or listen to and hadn't had the chance to yet. Plus I had to listen to the podcast draft that we'd just recorded, etc. So I actually spent 90% of the drive listening to those calls. I think I listened to music for like a short period of time, but I felt like actually very accomplished because particularly with my ADHD, like I would find it very hard to spend a day listening to calls and not getting distracted by doing other things, whether it's other work or chores or whatever, or appointments, whatever. So obviously being in the car for 12 hours straight, which actually, by the way, was meant to be 10 hours, but somehow it magically ended up being 12. I feel like that always happens with those kind of drives though. So yeah, I listened to all these calls, was like talking to Siri the whole drive home, like, hey, Siri, make a note about, and, you know, listen to the podcast drive, just like kind of still felt somewhat productive because I would have felt like way more tired if I'd just listened to music the whole drive. So yeah, long drive, but I still made use of the day and it was actually fine. Like it honestly didn't bother me. I've only done that drive one other time before when I moved to Sydney and I had Joey, my little sidekick, with me and my little Yaris packed to the brim with all my belongings. And I found that drive honestly awful because I didn't have anything to do on the drive except I was like chatting to friends to like stay awake. But I think because I kept my brain engaged, I actually, the time was fine. So apart from that, on Monday, all that stuff with Dad went down and I felt like that was a really emotional day for me. I was like also getting my period and I'd just obviously driven for 15 hours the day before and it was a lot. I had a really great call with Jordan as well on Monday afternoon. I would say he's like my holistic health coach. He's the one that I'm doing the gut protocol with, but aside from that, we're doing a lot more work on like the emotional embodiment, which I've talked about briefly in previous episodes. So we had a really, really good call, and I just came out of that with a lot of clarity around my relationships and things like that. Like, I just felt really good after that and implemented a few things immediately, and I just saw like the benefits of that straight away, which was really, really good. Aside from that, I had like a really great week at work, like quite a few new clients. And then I actually also had, I've got two clients, like OG clients that come from Canberra. So it's like a 3-hour drive, maybe a bit more, for them to come and see me. So they come together. And this time they came with one of the girls' sisters as well. So I had one new client, two refreshers, and one of those girls got her lips done as well. So it was a long day, kind of back to back with these three women, and it was really wild because one of them said to me, so first of all, we were talking about, I was about to take her in to do her refresh and her lips, and she said something along the lines of that she was on immunotherapy, and I was like, hang on, what? And long story short, she told me that the last time she got her brows done by me, which was 18 months ago, because I'd just moved into my new salon, they couldn't get their leave approved to come see me. And so, because she's saying to me, oh, my last appointment saved my life, like literally getting my brows done by you last time, like saved my life. And I'm thinking, what the hell? And she goes, we couldn't get our leave approved to come see you last time. So we chucked sickies and we had to get medical certificates. So we called the doctor on the drive down to see you, and I had kind of had this lump on my breast for like a while, and I was never going to get anything checked because I thought it was just to do with breastfeeding or whatever she thought she'd had it from. Like, she didn't think anything of it, but she's like trying to grasp at straws to come up with a reason that she needed a medical certificate. So she's like, I need a book in, I need to get this checked, and can I have a medical certificate? She's gone to the doctors to get this medical certificate, and they've obviously checked the lump while she's there. And it turns out it was a really aggressive breast cancer. And if she didn't get it checked that day, she would have died.
Oh, my God.
So she literally, I think I briefly told you about this, but like.
Nah, you haven't told me about
this. Haven't I?
No.
Oh, what? So she literally was showing me all these photos. I'm going to do a post about it. But she was showing me all these photos because not only did she say like having to do that saved her life, like she wouldn't have gone and got it checked otherwise. She's like, I had brows because that was a refresh as well. Like, that wasn't the first time she'd seen me. She's like, I got my brows refreshed, found the breast cancer, and then had to go through chemo and lost all these chunks of hair, lost her eyelashes. She was on steroids and so put on all this weight. And so she was feeling disgusting, obviously going through a really traumatic time. And she's like, but my brows were perfect the whole time. And I was just staring at her like, are you fucking kidding me right now? Like, what? So she sent me all these photos. She's like, because I said, can I please share this? Like, that is wild. And I'm just also so glad that, like, at least I was able to give her brows that she felt like gave her some kind of confidence going through that. So, yeah, we ended up having to do a little bit more research on whether I could tattoo her the other day whilst on the immunotherapy. And yeah, so that was wild.
That is crazy.
Yeah, she's fine now, but isn't that like, it's kind of like serendipitous, like very weird. Like,
yeah, the universe has her back.
Yeah, like that was just fucking wild. And aside from that, I have started to get really keen for the new year and planning kind of the moves for House of Brows in 2024. And I'm really excited because I did need, obviously the wheels are still moving and things are happening as always, but I purposely said when Emily's on mat leave, I'm like not really going to be launching anything new per se. I'm just going to come through to the end of the year with everything that we're always doing, just ticking along. And come 2024, she will be back in Feb in a different capacity, which I'll briefly take you through. And I've just, yeah, started to map out all of the offers, all of the staffing, my goals, what the business is going to look like in 2024. And Emily and I had a Zoom meeting the other day. So she had Isla on the call. It was really cute. She's just like doing mum things with holding her baby in the Zoom.
That's Amber literally on our meetings.
Yeah, it was so cute. And we mapped out what her role is going to look like when she comes back, because obviously she's a mum now and that's obviously her priority and that's totally warranted, but she still wants to stay in the business. And I'm sure as Isla gets older, she'll obviously want to do like more and more. I just know what she's like. She's a work bee. So yeah, I'm super excited to have started to map all of that out. And Emily and I have some big plans. I'm also about to hire someone new for the salon to start in the new year as well. And just lots of exciting things coming. We've got the retreat in April in Bali with myself and Jade. That's going to be massive. We've already got quite a few spots filled, like people that are keen for that. So yeah, big things happening. I feel like I'm in the planning stage for the new year.
Let's go.
I messaged Emily. I think I told you this. I messaged Emily yesterday and I said, I'm moving fast in 2024. Are you with me? And she's like, I'm always with you. And I was like, LFG, baby. So yeah, keen.
Love.
So.
It's a gratitude.
My gratitude.
Oh, you already said your gratitude.
Yeah.
I'm grateful for so many things. Obviously, dad being okay and me having the flexibility and freedom in my life and business to have been able to coordinate that and go stay with him for the whole week. I'm also really fucking grateful for Nick's parents because they were so helpful and they even came to the hospital as well, which was just like melted my heart.
That was so lovely.
And I'm grateful for you driving us home on Sunday. Because it was literally 3 hours out of the way.
Before we get stuck in, we'd really like it if you could please share this episode with someone who you think would benefit from it, because we really want to help as many people as possible and it really helps us grow the podcast as well.
And if you're listening on Apple, if you could give us a review, or if you're listening on Spotify, if you could give us 5 stars, we would love that so much.
So to get stuck in, basically today we are talking about money mindset. So we will be chatting about what that is, how you came to kind of have your particular money mindset, the difference between scarcity and abundance mindsets, and how to kind of change your money mindset if it's not serving you. The reason we decided to do this episode is because when we were doing our Sissy Q&A last week, we had a question around this, and I'm going to read the question to you guys because it straight away gave us lack mindset vibes, and we want to unpack that for you guys and give you the tools to flip that around if you are also someone who kind of is stuck in this kind of lack mindset. Also, because if you have a lack mindset around money, it's highly likely that you have a lack mindset around other things. So that is not serving you. And we want to flip the script and help you do so yourselves. So the question was, how do you save money in capital letters? Please, I don't even have fuck all, but money flies out the door on everyday stuff. I feel like I buy a shirt or some skincare and I'm left with $10. What the fuck?
Emphasis on money flies out the window. That is that what it says?
A limiting belief. And the reason we can identify that is because money doesn't actually fly out. That's her belief around money that is not necessarily fact.
So firstly, before we go into the difference and how you can identify it and how you can change it, it's really important to understand that money is a neutral resource and it's only positive or negative based on the meaning that you are giving to it.
Yeah, so your money mindset is basically your unique set of beliefs and your own attitude about money. So it has been developed over the years through various sources, like your parents, how you grew up, the community that you live in, like maybe your religion. It's not, again, it's like a limiting belief. It's not necessarily true. It's just the current beliefs that you have around money that often can associate money with kind of negative connotations that aren't serving you. Your money mindset will also drive like the decisions that you make and the thoughts that you have around like saving, spending, investing, and just it's like the language that you use when you talk about money, like will massively impact those kind of decisions in your life.
So some really common limiting beliefs around money, if you have said these things or thought these things before, could be things like obviously what whoever said in the question. So it's no matter how much they make or whatever, it's always just flying out the window. Or no matter how hard I try, I'll never have money to pay my bills. Or
even people that always say, I'm so poor, or I'm broke, or as soon as my money comes in, it's gone. Or like even things like rich people are greedy, or like those kind of beliefs that like literally there's no facts to support, but you have this like preconceived belief around money and its negative connotation.
Yeah, even like I'm not good with money.
Just like general complaining around money as well is like very much being stuck in a lack mindset that's not serving you. Even like I'm never going to be able to afford a house, or I don't make enough money to save. Any of those like I am, I can't, I don't, I like those kind of sentences, thoughts, beliefs to do with money.
And also you'll often find people with a negative money mindset will be very like risk averse, and actually we'll talk about kind of your attachment style and its relationship to money, but you might have a very like
avoidant or anxious or
attachment to your money.
So it's not uncommon for your attachment style to money to be similar to your attachment style in relationships or your relationship with food and things like that. So your money mindset will shape how you feel about things like debt. A big one is your attitude towards like other people that make potentially more money than you.
Yeah, or people talking about money.
Yeah, like if you get triggered by people that talk about money or how much they earn, or people that just generally earn more than you or have the ability to invest, that's all coming down to your money mindset.
Yeah. I feel like you can kind of break it up into a few different types of people. You've kind of got one person who is like the person whoever sent the question in, where they might actually be making good money or enough money, let's say, to pay their bills and do all the things, but they just feel like no matter how much money they make, they can never hold money. Or there could be another person who their mindset is very much that they don't make enough money to live the life they want to live or do the things they want to do. Like it's never enough
kind of attitude.
Yeah. So it's less about like how much they're spending and more about they're not making enough.
And again, that's all very lack based.
Yeah. And then I feel like there's another person who's kind of like very avoidant when it comes to money.
Yeah. Like not going to look at the bills, not going to look at the bank accounts, that kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So let's break down the difference between a scarcity or lack mindset versus an abundant mindset. So for example, someone who's in a scarcity mindset is often feeling like they're living paycheck to paycheck. They have a really negative feeling when they think or talk about money. You've possibly in the past gotten yourself in a lot of debt, and now that dictates kind of like how you feel when you think about like money or investing or spending. You might be someone that easily spends more money than you earn, and you're generally someone that is always focusing on never having enough. So I think that's the key thing, is it's a very negative focus, because it's like, I never have enough. I can't do this. I can't do that. I don't earn enough. I'm not good enough at saving, or like those kind of terms. And it's a very negative,
destructive
way to feel and think and act towards money. I also feel like, just on the note of being in that scarcity mindset, often those people are people that as soon as they get a bit of money, they quickly spend it because they think they're going to lose it, or it's going to be needed for bills or whatever. So you could be one extreme or the other, where you like feel like you need to hoard it because you don't know when you have any more come in, or you're someone that's going to quickly spend it before you lose it. So it's that kind of like, it's a bit toxic kind of relationship with money and it coming in and going out.
Yeah, yeah.
On the flip side is an abundance mindset.
So again, it's understanding that money is just a neutral resource, and it's having an abundant mindset is characterized by the belief that there is always enough for everyone to go around.
And it's about understanding that money being a neutral resource, it's just something that is traded around. There's plenty of it, and it's just passed around different hands. It comes, it goes, there's no negative meaning behind that apart from the meaning that you give to it.
And I think something that just came up with that as well is there'll be a lot of people that will not feel like they're worthy of having enough money. And so
someone to receive it.
Yeah. And so those kind of people will often have a negative kind of relationship to people that do have lots of money, even if it's someone like huge, like let's say Elon Musk. Like the way they speak about people like that is going to be super negative, and they'll refer to the way they've gotten their money or whatever being super negative.
Forced life's easy for them. Look how much money they have. Like that's a typical lack mindset kind of comment.
Yeah. Or they'll be, yeah, like referring to the way they got there as like stepping on other people or whatever it is. But I've actually said in past episodes, the fastest way to grow in your business or however you're, you know, earning money is by helping solve other people's problems. And so someone with like an abundant mindset will be able to see kind of all the benefit and be more inspired by those kind of people. Someone with an abundant mindset will also be much more generous and willing to share their money and also any other resources because they, yeah, understand that it's like the law of compensation, which is you'll receive what you put out. So it's very similar to the law of attraction, but it's more of a focus on the idea that compensation can come in kind of all different forms. So it's like if you...
mutually beneficial.
Yeah.
1,000% people need to realize that that applies to everything in your life. What you give out, you get back in relationships, in business, with money. Like it's just energy that is being transferred back and forth and around.
100%. I feel like this is so relevant to like, I think I've spoken about it on previous episodes about how sometimes I have to like check myself because I think, oh, I actually have... you know, been really lucky in quotations in my life, but it's like, actually, no, it's like the daily small decisions that we're making about everything. Like every conversation with someone, every, like there's so many little things and it's all based on the mindset that you have around what you put out is kind of what you'll receive.
I think the biggest part of having an abundance mindset too, it has nothing to do with how much money you make, right?
Yeah.
And everything to do with how grateful you are for the things that you already have. So for those who aren't in the realm of like energetics and manifestation and that kind of thing, vibrationally and energetically, gratitude is the highest vibration. So in terms of like energetics, the frequency that you vibrate at is the frequency of things that you will attract into your life. So if you cannot be grateful for the things that you already have, you're basically indicating that you do not have energetic capacity to hold anymore. Being grateful for the things that you already have is an abundant mindset. And then as a flow-on effect of that, you are then showing that you can actually hold more. So without doing and integrating that huge main component first, you can't really go further from there.
Yeah.
So to recap, like abundance has nothing to do with how much money you make, but everything to do with how grateful you are for the things that you have, that you currently have right now, whether it's healthy teeth or you got 7 hours sleep or it's a sunny day outside or you get to wake up and like I've seen, I don't know, people would have seen like these reels circulating at the moment where it's like mums or wives or whatever. And it's like when I'm cleaning up after my kids, like I'm so grateful that I was able to provide toys for my kids to make a mess. Or when I'm putting the dishes away, I'm so grateful that I have a family that I'm able to cook for. Instead of being like, oh, I'm always cleaning up after my kids or I'm always doing the fucking dishes or the laundry. Like, I'm so grateful that I am able to afford to provide a nice wardrobe for my family or that I can clothe my children, like as an example.
Yeah. And it's so, this is why, I don't know if anyone listening has heard before the phrase, more money won't fix money problems because if you don't have, like that abundant mindset, then more money is not going to change your situation. It's only going to, because depending on like the type of kind of scarcity mindset that you have, you're either going to continue to try and get rid of that money because you don't feel worthy of holding it or whatever the reason is, or through spending it or whatever it is, or you'll create more situations that are going to require more money.
Something to add to what you're saying too, Meg, is that making more money, like Meg said, will not solve your money mindset. It will actually amplify anything that you currently believe or anything that you currently are. So money will not solve your problems. It will amplify the problems or the beliefs that you already have. So in order to be able to hold more money, you need to address your money mindset first.
Yeah. Yes. 100%.
It's also like when you hear about people that are like broke Joe Blows and they win the lotto and then they're broke 3 months later.
Actually, that just reminded me of a belief that I used to hold. And when I say used to, I'm talking like not long ago, that I kind of worked through of you have to work hard for your money. Because, and there's kind of two sides to this. I would always be like, when people are talking about buying lottery tickets or scratchies or whatever, I'd be like, oh my God, because the people that are buying them are from a scarcity mindset. And so I'm like, A, you're not going to win it at all because you're not able to hold it. And B, if you did win it, like, again, you're not able to hold it. So I would have a negative kind of connotation to that myself. But what I've realized now is actually I can say buy a lottery ticket because I don't have to work hard for my money and money comes to me with ease and all of the things.
So when it comes to identifying your own money mindset and how you got that money mindset, we touched on earlier, it's possibly come from your parents' beliefs, which is one of the biggest things in your childhood and how you grew up and what your parents displayed growing up in your household, how they managed their money, things they said about money, like if you were at the shops and you asked for something and they said money doesn't grow on trees or we can't afford that or
buying everything that's on sale or...
Yeah, like I feel like that's probably one of the biggest impacts to your money mindset because obviously you're with your parents and your family for such a long period of time growing up.
And also any negative limiting beliefs on that note.
Yes, for sure. And then obviously your community, like the school you went to, the education you received, your friends, family, religion, things like that. So if you think about your life up until now and ask yourself some questions around like, what did you hear about money when you were growing up? Or how did you see money get handled when you were growing up?
I think a really easy way to kind of start this journaling process as well is to not necessarily be thinking, what are all the negative things I've heard about money? Because you might not actually be able to differentiate the two just yet. So if you literally were just to journal dump, what are all the things I've ever heard or thought about money? Yeah, from my parents or my community or school or whatever it is.
Yeah, for sure. And then once you've done that, kind of breaking them up into what are the things that you want to replicate in terms of those beliefs or things you saw and heard? And then what are the things that you want to do differently compared to what you saw or heard growing up? That will kind of start to help you identify what your beliefs are, whether they're serving you or not, and then where to go from there.
Yeah. And then further to that, it's because I think a lot of people, when they're trying to implement these new beliefs around money, it's going to feel unattainable at first. And so it's where can you find evidence of people living this life that you want to have the mindset of?
Yeah, and also something that I just thought of then that would be a really common belief is that my parents weren't rich, so I'm not going to be rich because that person's got lots of money because their parents did. And they were born into money and that kind of thing. Whereas you can absolutely find evidence of someone that has created wealth for themselves that didn't have rich parents. So and that's one example of a limiting belief because it's not fact that just because you have wealthy parents, you're going to become wealthy. Because on the flip side, there's plenty of wealthy parents whose children grow up not knowing anything about money because they didn't need to and therefore end up on the other end of the scale.
Yeah. And if you haven't yet read the book Rich Dad, Poor Dad, would highly recommend because it's exactly what Jess was just saying. And it's about understanding that, yeah, what you were taught growing up can actually be fuel to how you don't want to live your life. And it can give you the lessons you need to, if you can obviously recognize them first, to how you can do the complete opposite. Because, yeah, that book very much explains how, in a nutshell, his dad and then his friend's dad, and there's one with a scarcity money mindset and one with an abundant mindset, and he chooses to learn from his friend's dad. And there's still definitely good lessons from his dad as well, but it's about being able to discern like what is going to serve you best. That was the first ever personal development book that I ever read. And it's quite short, like it's not massively long. Yeah. It's an easy read.
And actually the second one is also really good if you're a business owner or if you want to be.
Yeah.
Self-employed, you're an employee. It's called Cashflow Quadrant, and it breaks down, which so many people would not know the difference between an employee, self-employed, business owner and investor, and therefore obviously very different structures.
That book was what taught me the difference between running a business and running a big business.
Owning a small business and working in a business versus being a business owner.
Yeah.
Because lots of people think like someone self-employed is a business owner.
When it's like the whole, all the reels. Have you seen those reels that have been going around where it's like, I wanted to have freedom, so I decided to run my own business. Now I'm working 24/7.
Yeah, literally.
It's and like I think that.
What they say in that book, just totally digressing, is that if you're a true business owner, you can step away. And obviously we call ourselves business owners, but I wouldn't say like we're self-employed technically according to that book. Like we are. If you can step away from your business for a year and come back and it be more profitable than when you left, that's like
the definition.
Definition of business owner.
Just to digress further, all of his books are incredible. I've read all of them. There's the investing one. His most recent one is kind of a recap of all of them. So I actually wouldn't recommend that one because I think you should go back to the start and read all of them because they're individually really good.
They're not hard to understand either. They're really easy for someone just getting into like the business self-development wealth kind of realm. I feel like they're quite easy to read and understand.
It will really help you highlight where your money beliefs have come from initially.
So let's go a bit more in depth into how to change your money mindset. So now that you have identified your money mindset and those limiting beliefs around money, it is your choice and your opportunity to challenge any of those unfavorable beliefs or behaviors that would absolutely be holding you back.
And also, like any limiting beliefs, it's really important to understand that these beliefs have served you in some way. So until you can get comfortable being uncomfortable, because usually the way they serve you is by keeping you comfortable or keeping you where you are.
Safe.
Yeah, keeping you safe and secure. Yes. So you need
really
to be able
not keeping you secure, but your ego thinks that it's keeping you safe.
Oh my God.
Not doing anything out of the norm.
Yeah, that's key. You need to be incredibly open-minded to the discomfort initially, because if you're not, then this following process is not going to work for you.
So I think to shed a bit more light on that energetic realm that we touched on earlier, with gratitude being the highest vibration, the lowest vibration is shame. So when you think about money and your past decisions around money, or maybe times you've gotten yourself in debt or you've made poor decisions around money, the first thing to do is to forgive yourself for any past mistakes or choices or beliefs that you've held around money, because shaming yourself around that is only going to keep you stuck in a really low vibration. So first of all, making the decision to acknowledge the beliefs and decisions you've made in the past and learn from those without shaming yourself for making those in the past. And then like we talked about earlier, and Meg's just said, come into this very open-minded, but getting really clear on those things that you have to be grateful for now, because stepping into the abundant mindset is really, really important to do before you try and make new choices around money.
And then from a more tangible perspective, once you've journal dumped your current beliefs and kind of discerned which ones are serving you for the life you want to live, I would be getting crystal clear on where your money is coming in and out, because that's going to highlight straight away your relationship to money, whether you have an anxious attachment style to money or an avoidant attachment style. Like if you're just spending all of the money that's coming in, or if you're hoarding all that money and you've got heaps of savings, but you're scared to, you know, invest it or do anything with it. It blows my mind how many people have never done a budget. And it's literally as simple as creating a spreadsheet. And there's literally so many free resources online that you can actually find to do this. But if we break it down super simply, it's literally just creating a spreadsheet of your income, and you're going to break that into whether you want to have the budget as weekly, fortnightly, or monthly based off how frequently you're getting paid. And that could be paid from a number of different things. It doesn't just have to be like your, you know, income from your wage at your one job or whatever it is. And then a list of all of your expenses. And again, breaking those down into the same frequency. So if you're getting paid on a fortnightly basis, then you would break down your expenses into a fortnightly amount. So the easiest way I would recommend is just printing out your statements for the last probably 3 months, 6 months if you're keen, and taking an average of everything that you're spending your money on and breaking that down into, say, a fortnightly amount or weekly or monthly.
And, yeah, you can basically find an average of what you've been spending on groceries, on private health insurance, on makeup, going out, outfits, all of the things. And also something that I wanted to highlight when you were talking, Meg, is that a lot of people think, oh, I only buy this, this, and this.
Yeah.
When you actually look at your bank account, you're very likely spending A, on more categories than you think, and B, spending more in each category than you think.
Yeah.
And the other thing on that note is that a lot of people are very quick to say what their values are, right? Or what they care about in life. But one of the easiest ways to identify what you actually care about in life is looking at your bank account.
Mm-hmm.
So I think instead of just saying, oh, I spend this on my private health, I spend this on groceries each week, actually export your last 3 to 6 months worth of transactions from your banking to Excel or Google Sheets and get an average for each category. And then you can find a realistic amount of what you're spending versus your income that's coming in, and you can make an actual realistic budget.
Yeah.
Because not doing that and turning a blind eye, not opening the bank accounts, all of those kinds of things, it's a very avoidant mindset and it's not serving you.
Yeah. And it's also from there, you can then identify not necessarily what you're spending your money on, but why you're spending
it. Yes, I love that. And also another thing I just wanted to point out, that's something I learned the hard way in business, is whilst when I was just talking about that avoidant mindset, be really careful to not fully put this, like if you're a business owner and you outsource like your accounting and your finances, be really careful not to leave all of that to somebody else and not run your eyes over it, because it's really easy to think and trust someone to be managing your money and then to find that it hasn't been managed the way that you would like, for example. And I think it's really important to, whether or not you think it's you're being avoidant, it's really important to make sure that you are really clear on your own numbers in your business at all times, regardless of who's managing it.
That is something that I learned from one of my mentors years ago, because I remember vividly being shocked that he still did his bookkeeping. And I was like, oh, like you're so, like you have so much going on, but you're still spending the time to look over your finances regularly.
Yeah.
And because I think I was asking him about like outsourcing it or whatever, because it's, at the time was quite time consuming because I didn't have the systems that I have now. And that's something that I've like kept with me, ever since, because so many people have no idea. And again, back on the budget thing, so many people have no idea where their money's even going in the first place, let alone what's coming in.
Yeah, like for example, you and I both outsource all our accounting and whatnot, but we'll regularly, like I'll go into Xero and I'll run the profit and loss and check how my accountant has allocated everything, because I want to A, be sure that it's been allocated correctly, and B, be really clear on what is being spent where. So I think that's super important. Just while we're talking about being avoidant, like, don't think that just because you've delegated it to someone that it's dealt with.
Yeah. And I think especially in business, you'll find a lot of people's business revenue will increase, but their profit will actually decrease or stay the same because of their money mindset and avoidance to where their expenses are in their business. And then lastly, once you've identified the limiting beliefs, chosen the ones that will serve you moving forward, practicing gratitude and letting go of any shame, creating a budget is, if you have a very limited money mindset, this is going to be a process that you're going to have to commit to and practice every single day. So things like, once you've reframed your money beliefs, affirming them every single day and practicing, like we've spoken about in previous episodes, about cognitive behavioral therapy, where you're catching the limiting beliefs as they come up. Because you might do this process once and then you might actually feel like, fuck yeah, I've made so much progress, and then you'll come into more money and that will highlight more limiting beliefs for you that you will need to then work through. So it's an ongoing process. Another really easy way to be able to recognize this as well is, if you refer back to our triggers episode, as you're kind of going through this journey, you'll notice you'll be triggered by certain people and things they're saying, whether it's people in your life, people on TV or social media or whatever it is. And so, yeah, being able to catch that, understand that you're triggered for a reason and kind of unpack that.
Yeah, and it's like we always talk about the beliefs and habits that you currently have. You have learned them and subconsciously practiced those for all the years in your life up until now. So if you think about how many years that's taken for you to ingrain those beliefs in you, you need to commit the time, like Meg is saying, to unlearning those beliefs.
Yeah. And what the beliefs that will get you to, say, your next level are going to be completely different again to the level after that.
And to get to each new level requires you to not only unlearn who you were before and the beliefs you had before, but be ready to become a new version of you.
I also just had a totally rogue thought pop up that I think is really important, is using discernment with who you speak to when it comes to changing or instilling these new money beliefs, because I can think of people in my life that I wouldn't even bother challenging their beliefs, because it's just not going to be conducive to your...
It's not even going to land.
No.
And to wrap all of this up, it's really important that you remember you are on your own journey, you are on your own timeline, and that comparison with anybody else's journey, timeline, beliefs, childhood, upbringing, parents, whatever... Comparison is the thief of joy, and it is the thief of growth, and that you are on your own journey.
I fucking love that with everything. Shall we do some money affirmations for everyone to repeat with us?
Yes, let's do that. And you know what my favorite one is? I've got two, actually.
Money comes to me with ease.
Yeah, money flows to me frequently and with ease. And my other one, because you guys know that I'm working on my femme and stepping out of my mask and into my femme. My other affirmation that I love to just say and repeat when my alarm goes off to do them every night at 7 is, when I step into my feminine, unexpected abundance flows to me easily.
Oh, I love that so much.
It's fucking weird, because when Emily was in the salon before she went on mat leave, I would come in the morning. I'd, shit you not, guys, if you don't already know this, we're like, her and I are like telepathically connected. It's fucking weird. But I would come into the salon in the morning and she'd go, because I wasn't doing like the affirmations every night. Like, I don't do them every night. It would just be like random. And I'd come in the morning and she'd go, did you do your affirmations last night? Because we just got this big order of blah, or we just had like a big enrollment into blah or whatever.
Yeah.
And like, it'd be like a few thousand dollars into my account. Or I'd come in and I'd be like, I was going ham on this affirmation, like, and I'll tell her about it. And then she'd be like, bro, look at this order. It's wild. Like,
love.
Just vibrating at that frequency where I attract Bitcoin, you know? All right. Well, we trust you found value in this episode.
You're all going to be money magnets.
Yes. Also, another book that's a super basic, like, if you're actually really struggling with budgets and things like that, The Barefoot Investor is a goodie as well.
Yeah, and the GOAT of money mindset books is Secrets of a Millionaire Mind.
Oh, I think we've vlogged that book on here before.
Yeah, that literally.
It's my number one book recommendation of all time.
Don't forget to follow us on Instagram at TalkTovyToMePod, and you can find the link in our bio for our anonymous sissy advice segment Q&A form. So get those babies in.
You can also now follow us on TikTok and YouTube at TalkTovyToMePod as well if you prefer those platforms.
Thanks for listening.
Love you, bye.
Love you, bye. Happy money.
Happy Money Friday. Ha ha ha.